And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 124. Going to recap some recent news. I think there's been a little bit of news lately. I don't know. Maybe a little bit going around baseball, unfortunately. Going to talk some Max EV gainers and faders via the wonderful Bloom boards, take some listener questions, and much, much more. But before we do that, a little bit of housekeeping here. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Not too bad, man. Both UCL still intact. So
as far as you know, yes.
As far as I know, I don't use them much, but actually I did this weekend.
I was gonna say T-ball.
Did our first T-ball coaching. That was still recovering. Still recovering. That was something else. But no, I'm doing good. It is wild how much has happened since our Thursday show.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. It's all been talked about, at least the Strider, Bieber, whatever. But like, it is kind of crazy to think 5 days back what did not happen versus what happened over the weekend and even through today, which we'll talk about a few of the kind of late coming injuries that came in on Tuesday. But yeah, wild start to the year.
Yeah, we'll start with a positive note before we get into the news and notes. But can you name this player, Ryan? 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, no runs, no walks, 14 Ks. He's the first pitcher since 1988 to strike out 14 batters on fewer than 90 pitches. Can you name that pitcher?
I can.
You don't want to, do you?
It wouldn't surprise me at all if 2 days from now we find out he's torched. But B, so disclaimer out of the way, it is the health risk, quote unquote, Tyler Glasnow.
Yep. Yeah, what an outing by one Tyler Glasnow. Your labor team must be just rocking at starting pitching.
Yes. I am tied for first right now with Fangraphs. And yes, the Glasnow, although Pablo Lopez hasn't been all that, but team's doing well as opposed to some of my other teams. I don't know if you saw this in our Bubba and the Bloom Listener League. You know what place I'm in on one of the leagues?
I'm pretty sure you're in 15th.
15th.
Yeah. Wasn't going to say that one. Wasn't going to bring that up.
Effing place.
They say it's early, I was told, Ryan. They said it was early.
It's early, but something bad probably will have to happen if I actually end that league in last place. That's not a good start for me there.
Yep, that's fun stuff. Michael Cicchini's in the chat here. He's in the listener leagues. Glasnow is not original, but you just know in this season of pitcher injuries, Glasnow's going 180. He's probably right. It's just the craziness that is this season is, Trout's going to stay healthy and he'll go like 50-50. Glass is going to throw 180 innings and you're just going to be like, what is going on?
I know. It's nuts. And I mean, I'll bring it up now because I want to get your thoughts on it because you had a tweet earlier today, Bubba, that kind of piqued my interest. But like, so there's a lot of talk on, what's causing all these pitcher injuries and yada yada. I don't really want to go there because it's happening and it's probably going to continue to happen. And so really the question is, how do we as fantasy players and listeners and that sort of thing react to it? You had I don't know how many times you tweeted today. How far do I have to scroll down? You had a tweet today that basically wondered, here we go. Leverage relievers are going to be, and I don't know if you're being half sarcastic or what or not, but leverage relievers, you say, are going to be filling many roster spots this season with all these starting pitcher injuries. And it just, I don't know, something I wanted to kind of bring up is like, do we need to shift our thinking in, like, I have Pivetta on like half of my teams. Do I go down that rat race of trying to replace him with a sixth starter from the Red Sox? Or is there a shift in mindset where if everyone else is going to do that and probably get blown up by these kind of back end starting pitchers that we warn about all draft season long, is it, the zig when others zag, and maybe, how many people are doing this? I don't know. Is this the year of the middle reliever?
Yep. I'm with you. I picked up Yarbrough this last week. We talked about him a few times. Like he's one of those kind of middle relievers / long relievers. I think long relievers is the guys to look at. Those guys are going to be going in that range. And with all these pitcher injuries, like there's going to be a point where this is going to happen. Like the Reds are pushing Lodolo's start back to Saturday. He's healthy, but they want to institute a sixth man rotation. So who's the sixth man? Is it going to be a bullpen game? The Dodgers said they're going to do a bullpen game. You're going to see a lot more of that with all these injuries and like – I don't want to say just the White Sox because look how horrific their rotation is. But there's a lot of teams like the Mets. They just pitched Tehran for a day, DFA'd him. Now they're probably going to bring Jose Budo back up. And Budo's not bad, but like you just see where this is going. It's only April 9th. So everyone's already losing longevity. Eventually, you'll bring up your prospects you're talking about, but are they all going to hit? How deep can they go into the season? It's just a revolving door of issues. And I know we've talked about it in recent years. I've been a big proponent of those openers type situation, targeting those pitchers late in the season. I've been a fan of that instead of going for other things. And I think it's just the time is now. I think it's a combination, though, of those long guys, but also kind of the closers in waiting to maybe be more aggressive. Because, like I mentioned to you in my Substack waiver thing, I wrote up Shelby Miller, and he picked up his third win. He has three wins and a save. He's getting used a ton. It's him and Foley, essentially, in my book. Like, Lane got the save because Miller was off duty that day. Could he get blown up? Sure. But I think, you know, Chris Martin's, Shelby Miller's, like, just don't go to any reliever. But look at those like next dudes. That's like I think that's the angle. The next closers and then the long men, and navigate that minefield.
Because I think the natural thing is to just look at which starting pitcher can I replace Spencer Strider, Nick Pivetta with? And you're looking at like our friend Tommy Henry, Austin Winans, filling in for Strider. That's gonna soon turn into Austin Lawson's. So it's just like, I don't know. It's the natural thing to do is to look at replacement starting pitchers. And I don't know if that's the right thing to do this year because everyone else is going to be doing that. And there's just so much blow up risk with going down that rabbit hole. So I will be spending some time this week, I'm sure, looking at some of those longer relievers like that you just talked about.
And like one cheat code, or not, I guess, no, it's a cheat code per se, but, and I'm bad at this kind of stuff. Like we've talked about it for years, caveman over here looking at the deep stat and everything, but it's been proven throughout the years. So I'll throw Saris a bone. Stuff Plus is great for relievers. It's phenomenal for relievers. Like that's one of those where you can pick up on something pretty quick because it levels out really quick. So like this guy's not a reliever, Keaton Wynn. Starts haven't been great, but he's high up there. But if you start looking through relievers, that's when you can kind of identify dudes that you might be able to get going. You're gonna have to like navigate through the Stuff Plus page, which is not always the most ideal situation because some of it's a little trickier than others. But like take away qualified, just look at zero innings on Stuff Plus for fun. Like Isaiah Campbell for Boston. I don't know how good he is, but he's second behind Trevor Miguel. Clayton Beat, like there's just Mason Miller's fourth. That tells you something right out the gate.
That's Ian just Hamilton, I would think, is maybe up there. I don't know. We brought him up on our Fab preview on Thursday.
But like guys like that, Jake Diekman's up here, Cade Smith. They might not be big names now, but these are kind of guys that could waltz their way into maybe a win here or there, least decent ratios and strikeouts. That's something that you could use to your advantage instead of getting shelled or getting another IL stint, this kind of thing.
Yep. So. Cool. Yeah, no, that's it. It was just something on my mind today. It was just like, we know this is going to keep happening. You know, it sucks to lose guys. Everyone's losing pitchers. It's who's going to pivot in season and react to what we're seeing right now and from a Fab standpoint. So, I don't know. Michael Cicchini in the chat also says Pierce Johnson and Joe Jimenez, both nasty, good team. I assume Joe Jimenez, he says Jay Jimenez. But
yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff. You're going to have to put some extra time in potentially and look at different things here and there and go. But I'll keep saying if Yarbrough is somehow available, I'd be one of my first targets because we know he's getting usage at least once a week on a great team. So go that direction. All right. Before we get into more fun pitching news, let's have a good one here. Non-injury related news. Jackson Holliday is going to be called up to play for the Baltimore Orioles, or at least play with the team, assuming he's in the lineup, on Wednesday. I haven't seen the exact move or who's going down or what the whole cha-cha is going to be for him, but you'd imagine Ramon Urias is kind of end of days in this scenario. So that's good because Ramon's been playing a ton. What's your thoughts on Jackson Holliday here?
Love to see him up. Anytime we get a number one prospect up, it is cause for celebration. And yes, I would think that Holliday goes to shortstop and probably Gunner moves over to third base, you would think. This is also somewhat of a shift in mindset a little bit for Baltimore, who had been playing Austin Hayes pretty regularly in the outfield, at least against left-handed pitchers. And it now seems like, as after we talked about Colton Cowser as a tough drop that I made on the last show, listener question, at least against right-handed pitching, Colton Cowser is starting to get more playing time. So wonder if there's that just general kind of youth movement finally going on in Baltimore. So those two names are interesting to me. I don't think there's much. I mean, Holiday is, I would think, universally rostered, right?
Not in the NFBC, probably.
Let me check. I'm just curious. NFBC 12 teamers.
If you didn't draft him, he ain't there.
He's 99% in 12 teamers.
Really?
Wow. In the online championship. So.
Well, good to know. Don't have to worry about that fab this week. Yeah. Someone did ask me, I'll ask you this, Ryan. Someone in my Substack messaged me and I gave him my answer, but he's in a head-to-head. No, he's in a roto format. And he has Ezekiel Tovar and Mikel Garcia, and he asked if he should drop one of them for Holiday. I gave him my answer. I'm curious to hear yours.
Oh, my God. That's a good problem to have.
Yes, 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 yes.
That's tough. I guess I would lean dropping Tovar for Holiday. I think I'd rank him. I'd do Holiday and Mikel.
Yeah, I told him to keep the first two because we know who they are. That's
just
my
theory. Pick up Holiday?
Not for those two. I said, if you have other options, go for it, but not for those two. Like, those guys are playing every day. We know who they are. But this goes back to our drafting style. I'm just suspect to prospect. I'm not going to sell the farm. You got Tovar, who I believe is a 2020 guy. You got Mikel Garcia. Good Lord, we know what he's doing. So that's just my two cents. I thought that was a heck of a question because that'll be a dilemma in a lot of guys' leagues, especially people who play like in 10-team leagues and everything. There's going to be a lot of those kind of questions. Like, do I drop so-and-so that's pretty darn good? Like, I don't think Dansby Swanson's a good one, but there's going to be some. Like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, how son Kim? Do you drop Kim for, like, right, Jackson Holiday? Like, those are legit questions where it's going to be coming down. So, and even Scott Burks in the chat says Tovar's batting second right now. Second in Colorado. Blackman's hitting good, leading off. Like, it's a tough one to go with, but those are good problems to have.
Jackson Holiday is, so I just checked while you were talking, I'm in my my family league is a 10-team points ESPN league. So I did just do a little quick check to see if Holiday's there, and he is already rostered by, I think, my uncle. 42% rostered in ESPN leagues. So
that's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's a really good point. Like, it's those decisions that we probably don't talk enough about on this show. Well, we focus a little too much on the deeper ones, but
like Rico just said, Nico Horner, that'd be a legit one. That's a good one.
Yeah,
because I'm not a Nico Horner guy, but if you give me like 2 seconds here, I'm gonna give you the Yahoo number. We're gonna get it here. Wait, no, he has no stats. I can't even get it for you. It won't show up here. Never mind. Can't get
Rico. Rico can find it. He's the Yahoo guy.
Yeah, he's the Yahoo guy. But I would guess he's around 65% Yahoo. So those are the kind of things on this. We'll just throw this in here now, Billy Memphis, since we're talking. I may be late on this, but do you think Heston Kjerstad gets called up? Their outfield's jam-packed. That's the problem.
It's funny. Yeah, so Billy, we did not mention Kjerstad by name, but he came up in my head while I was talking about that quote-unquote youth movement in Baltimore with Colton Cowser. I don't think Kjerstad's coming up soon because of the logjam, but an injury or two, you never know. Joe says 80% rostered on Yahoo for Jackson Holiday. So
still, that's 20% of leagues, folks. That's probably a lot of the 10. That's probably a lot of the 10-team leagues, but it's out there is the point. So go looking. It also is kind of a bummer at the same time if he's like almost universally rostered in FBC, 80% in Yahoo. It's one of those everyone gets psyched at the prospects getting called up, but you either already have them or you don't. So it's kind of a bummer situation in that regard. But yeah, the Kjerstad thing, like Ryan said, I'm 100% with you. It's the outfield's a big mess. Do they drop Austin Hayes is the question, but then you have all left-handed bats. That becomes an issue. So he's just Kjerstad might be traded for another pitcher would be my guess or something like that. He'd be in one of those conversations. If it came
once Corbin Burns' elbow goes, I'm not gonna finish that sentence.
Stop with this, please. Kyle Bradish is starting his rehab assignment this week. He might be back by the end of April. Now to the bad news, as Ryan led us in that direction. Good segue, partner.
Dude, I'm hurting from this Pivetta.
I can tell. That was like that was kind of that sarcastic tone that you could hear the pain in. And like Will Sisko says, shh.
Yeah. No, that was messed up on my, I've already done it to Glasnow and Burns in the first 15 minutes of this show. So
you want me to say Pablo Lopez while we're at it? Like, what do you want?
Dude, don't go there, please.
All right.
That's not cool.
Framber Valdez to the IL. Shoulder or elbow, sorry, elbow. It's almost all elbows now. Elbow inflammation. When this happened on Monday, it's kind of a late scratch. He felt something in his elbow when warming up, did the old scans, all that fun stuff. They're shutting him down for a few days to let the swelling go down. They think it's all it is. I think they'll do another scan when the swelling's down. That's when you really see where things land. Remember, Yuri Perez had elbow inflammation. So just throwing that one out there.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that, in terms of Framber, there's nothing to do. You just wait and hope. I'm also skeptical of any kind of optimistic news from the team, but I'm obviously very jaded and biased right now. Sounds like it's Spencer Arrighetti stepping in. He will be popular in name only.
A lot of fun with that name.
Yes, the Italians will be clamoring.
Especially Modica. Modica said, you took Pavetta for us, or you took Nicky P from us. If you take, who is, I'll have to go find this, but he mentioned the other like Italian pitcher, like we're basically gonna go to war. He had like a Goodfellas gif. Oh my god, this is beautiful. So now they replaced Nicky P with Arrighetti.
Yeah, they get protective. And this is like, so Arrighetti, so I don't know, kind of a middling pitcher prospect per the Baseball HQ scouting report. The biggest thing I like to look at, and this is nothing groundbreaking, but not even just strikeout to walk, it's the walk rate in the minors for these guys who come up and you want them to try and go through five and get the win. Arrighetti had a 13% walk rate in AAA for Houston last year and a 10% strikeout minus walk, which is not great, Bob. If you pick up Arrighetti this weekend, his first start lines up on Monday against the Braves. So it's just like, this is exactly what we were talking about at the top of the show is, do you want to go down this? And maybe Arrighetti's great. I don't know. But like, do you want to go down this rat race of trying to replace with these six or seven starters? It's like that start scares the hell out of me for Arrighetti. He does debut on Wednesday at KC, so a strong outing there might even push that fab price up more. And but yeah, Atlanta on Monday, it's just like, that's ratio hell potentially.
Yeah, no, I had this conversation with some other guys, and big time name, like people thought he should have made the team out of camp, had a good spring, but I saw the same things. You know, strikeouts are great, tons of walks, gets up the home runs pretty well too, so I was kind of already like, yeah, we'll see. I guess if you're in a league, you can do daily moves and Arrighetti is available. I think it's a good stream versus Kansas City potentially, but just know it could get ugly quick because Casey's offense actually isn't that bad. So that's interesting. But yeah, you mentioned the Atlanta game. Yeah, that ain't good. That's a rough go.
Like,
well, and the other thing real quick is the following week, Verlander comes back. So does Arrighetti stay? Does JP France stay? Like, there's a couple moving parts there that you might even be around for that long.
And like they called up, I mean, the Astros called up Blair Henley the day that Framber got scratched and dude got one out and gave up five runs with three walks. So it's just like
a Tehran.
Yeah. I mean, that's even bad by Tehran standards, but yeah. So it's just that risk trying to pick these right guys out of the haystack.
Yeah, it's a rough go, that's for sure. So we'll be rooting for Arrighetti, the spaghetti, and have some fun with that one. But let's go Nicky P, Nick Pavetta. He's got the forearm flexor strain that the Red Sox don't think is too bad. That's cute. But, yeah, we'll see. They actually are pretty adamant that it's not bad. But, again, like I said, we'll see when that comes down. Right now, I don't know who is coming into that spot in the rotation. Like, I was looking all day for it. They brought up a reliever because they don't even need a starter until next week, the way their schedule lines up. So they're going to go with a four-man until they actually need one type thing. So we'll see.
Yeah, looks like it might be Cooper Criswell, who is a 27-year-old pitcher in AAA. Had a 573 ERA and a 155 whip. And for the Rays last year over 33 innings. So scratch them off your list, Cooper, Criswell, and just hope like hell that Nick Pivetta is back after the minimum.
Adam Lee mentions he had to man up and throw Ronnell versus the Texas rematch. If he pulls off another gem, this will tell me he's a keeper for a Turner. Yeah, that's very, very,
I think
very
four true. Strikeouts, four walks for Ronnell Blanco. So I don't know how sustainable it is for that guy. But again, given the state of pitching, he's done awful well for you.
Take it and run. Just want to mention, because we all like Sawyer Gibson Long last year, we discovered him on the show thanks to Nick Pollock. So
me thinking his name was, because you just did him by last name, and I actually thought his name was Gibson first Long. Name Long. So yeah, that was a moment.
He's down and out again with his elbow/flexor injury. He sustained in his rehab start after three innings. So just the way I look at it, the only takeaway is maybe it's another step closer for Jackson Jobe to join the Detroit Tigers, essentially.
Yeah, I guess they've got five starters though. So
but it's like this will be the next man up. I mean, like this will be the sixth man in theory. So he's getting a step closer to we're not trying to be negative here, but do we think
any should
keep it all five? Yeah, Kent Tomaeda needs to go out back. I nearly dropped him last week because it's so ugly. Nothing has reassured me yet. That's the real bad situation to all of this. So maybe that's the move for Jackson Jobe. I don't know, but it's just it's bad all around.
Yep.
So. All right, Wilson Contreras mentioned this to Ryan before the show. He's been day-to-day for a bit here, which is iffy. Got hit on the hand by a pitch. So he was back in the lineup on Tuesday. And his Wilson Contreras' quotes before the game, "I still can't squeeze the glove, and it hurts to swing, but I wouldn't miss this game." So that tells me go pick up Yvonne Herrera, like we've been talking about all preseason. He's been batting fourth when Contreras is out. He hit sixth on Tuesday. He's playing pretty much every day. The time is now, folks.
Yeah, Yvonne Herrera has actually started all the last six games, all at catcher against lefty and righty. It's not like St. Louis has had too many other options there. I think this kid's a stud. I know we're kind of speaking to the choir here at this point. The early skills are fantastic for Yvonne Herrera. This is a catcher that you, assuming this Wilson Contreras news is as bad as we think it is, whereas that quote sounds, Yvonne Herrera, even if it's for a couple weeks, I think you need a second catcher. Even if you don't really need a second catcher that badly, Yvonne Herrera is probably better than your second catcher.
Yes, he probably is. So keep that one out there, folks. I added Miguel Amaya this last week to replace Yan Gomes, and I was close to Herrera was in the waterfall. No one bailed me out and let me have Herrera, so he might be getting some spots here pretty soon. JD Martinez, this is Mets 101, folks. We got Mets'd on this one. So JD Martinez said he went to the minors because he had to get more, up to game speed, all that stuff. Cool. It's supposed to be 10 days. Cool. Well, he got shut down for a few days due to general soreness. That was reported on Monday. General soreness. Going to miss 2 to 3 days. Should still be back by this weekend. Okay. Then on Tuesday, the Mets happened. JD Martinez is dealing with lower back tightness, and he had a cortisone shot in his back. He'll be shut down for 3 to 5 days and begin to ramp up after that. So, like, at best guess, you get him back mid to end of next week, I'm guessing, if all goes well. It's just a line of, not a pitching injury, but a lot of people who are drafting JD and like, sweet, I can miss a week, no biggie. You might be getting closer to, we're approaching 3 weeks now. Like, this is getting a little sketchy real quick. And I forgot you drafted him now with that look on your face.
Yeah, no, I was gonna add. I mean, no one cares about my team, but this probably is the case for others. Is yes, I have JD Martinez on my labor team, which is a 15 team mixed league, and it's been frustrating, but also we can't IL him because he's not on the IL, and so he's in the minors, so you're just kind of hanging out. I'm holding JD Martinez until like something gets real bad. I do wonder like if it does get bad, if Mark Vientos re-enters
that would the be equation. Awesome.
I mean, he's hitting over 300 in AAA right now, a couple homers already. And God, the Mets need some juice. So
yep.
I don't know. Just something in deep leagues to keep an eye out, or if you have an extra roster spot and the JD Martinez news is bad, Mark Vientos, I think, is a kind of a decent stash if he's up sometime soon in Queens.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've been a Vientos 101 guy, but Adam Lee has a great question here. I'm so close to dumping Henry Davis for Yvonne. My man is struggling. Davis is close to getting catcher, but yeah, Henry Davis is starting to make a lot of people wonder if taking that shot on Henry Davis to be a catcher is a good thing here. 156 to start the CD and a hit on Tuesday, almost a 30% K rate, two doubles. It's a rough start for Henry Davis, and I wasn't overly impressed with him last year when he got called up. And I'm seeing a lot of similar traits here.
Yeah, and not hitting the ball all that hard. He is striking out quite a bit. So that 133 is that 133 batting average is kind of well deserved. This is not what we expected. We kind of thought Henry Davis would produce, but wouldn't get catcher eligibility for a while. And now he's not producing, and he still might not get catcher eligibility because maybe he goes back
down. Joey Bart, baby.
Yeah, Joey, your boy is back. Catching.
Joey freaking Bart, everybody. Just want to throw that out there real quick. Joey Bart, it's the funniest thing to me because he got traded, and I think I wrote it up in one of my daily news blurbs. I'm like, Joey Bart got traded. I said, maybe he'll take some play time away. After all, they wanted his Manny Grandal to play. So here you go. And Joey Bart already went deep.
I said, didn't he homer the other night? Yeah.
He homered in one of his first games.
He's 3-for-8 with a dong and 4 ribbies.
Dude, it's hilarious. That's the best way I can put it. It is very, very funny to me. Like I'm trying to pull
your
up.
Your boy is back.
I love Joey Bart. That just,
I know,
complete utter disappointment. But yeah, if you look at Kirlin's, Kirlin has a actual. It's not just lineups. He has playing time, like how many guys have played. You can do lefty righty splits. A lot of cool stuff on Kirlin's site if you really want to dig into it. It's MLBPlayingTime.com. But yeah, there's a Joey Bart is on here, and he has caught the last two games at catcher. So just throwing that out there, Joey Bart shows up, and now he's catching for the Pittsburgh Pirates. So says a lot, folks.
You know what we say about players on bad teams? They play. Joey Bart, honestly, if you're streaming second catchers, like, not bad.
Yeah, he could do worse. He could do worse. Maybe that pedigree eventually shows up. A couple more items of news here, and keep the chat going, guys. It's great. We will keep answering your questions as we go. But Lou Bob, just wanted to mention this because, you know, we got Mets with JD. We got Bobby Nightingale with Lou Bob on, I think, a Sunday night, maybe Monday morning. Bobby said Lou Bob's going to miss 3 to 4 months. And it's like, yeah, that's not good. That's not good. And then the White Sox come back less than 24 hours later, I think. No, he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks, and he's going to return after that. I'm still skeptical because of the injury. He's had this injury before, like any minor setback. There's a lot of factors to it, but the fact that it went from 3 to 4 months to essentially a month and a half to 2 months, that's Bobby Nightingale at his finest.
Yep, it is. It does. I mean, that does change things. Like Lou Bob is a potential drop at 3 to 4 months, but the current 6 to 8 or whatever is 6 to 8 weeks is holdable. Yoán Moncada just went on, or I don't know if he went on the IL, but he will go on the IL because he had an adductor strain. Yeah, it did not look good running down first base.
He couldn't get to first.
No, he did not make it.
He did not make it.
And actually had a decent start to the year, hitting second every day. And you were on
up for a while. It's
on the Yoán train there a little bit. I think the takeaway, there's nothing, dude. The White Sox lineup, it was bad before. It is.
Did you see who led off today?
It was the Grossman.
Yeah, he's gonna probably lead off the rest of the year.
That's, I didn't know he was on the White Sox.
He was a minor league deal, got called up, and now he's rocking and rolling.
So like the White Sox did. It's actually ironic they touched up Logan Allen today, but like from a streaming standpoint, God, that's attractive. That's attractive. Anyone going against the White Sox, that lineup is god awful right now.
Maddie Davis at Maddie Wood on Twitter had a funny one saying that we hit the White Sox trifecta way earlier than we expected, and he had a check mark for Eloy, Lou Bob, and Moncada because they're all hurt already. It's like you don't root for injuries, but when it happens every single season, it's just like, good Lord, it's getting out of hand, folks, getting out of hands.
Michael in the chat says the White Sox should just play Dominic Fletcher at lefty and righty. That does bring up a thing, like the White Sox are extremely platoon heavy. I think half their lineup turns over with lefty righty. So even from that aspect, it's tough to even roster any of those guys before, even if they did play all the time.
And the last thing I got on news here, there's not a lot to say really, but just wanted to bring up the Spencer Strider stuff. Like, we're going to get the update by the end of the week, supposedly. Ryan and I have our theories on what's taking place on this one. But they called up Alan Winans, who's been a spot starter in the past. He might be the dude. Everybody wants AJ Smith-Shawver, rightfully so. If you look at RotoWire's projections, they have Winans in tomorrow now. That was Dylan Dodd before that. So looks like Winans get the first shot. And if it goes well against the Mets, he gets at Houston and then Texas next week. So we might get AJ Smith-Shawver quicker than you think.
Do we want AJ Smith-Shawver?
He hasn't been pitching well. You are correct.
Okay. I don't know. Were you going to say something else? I don't know.
Well, I was going to change the subject.
Yeah, no, go for it.
No, Braves. Timothy Lilly in the chat makes a good point about the White Sox. Oscar Colas is getting called up. I did see that for the Moncada deal. That's a dude that had some hype. He's shown signs of life in deeper formats. I wouldn't say run to pick him up, but on the old watch list you have, we've seen him with power. Like, this is, he at least adds a fantasy asset to your team, which Oscar Colas, if given the proper run, who knows? Like, eventually these kids are going to have no pressure on them. They're just going to be able to go out there and play. And that's when these guys kind of surprise you a little bit. So we'll see how that plays out.
Yep. That's a good call out. I like that.
All righty. Let's bloom board it up, Mr. Bloomfield. What do you got for us tonight? It's week 3 of the season. So again, it's still pretty raw with the data, but Ryan came through with a good one.
Hey, we gotta at least give the people something, even though it is this early.
I'll take my head about back. We can video it if you'd like.
No crimes.
Oh, it's gonna be a crime.
All right. So let me turn this banner off. All right. So similar to what we talked about last week, and again, every Tuesday during the season, we're gonna do, you know, news and then a bloom board, listener questions is kind of the Tuesday thing, and then Thursday will be our fab previews. Admittedly, scraping a little bit at the bottom of the barrel to try and find some actionable stuff at this point. Really, especially for hitters, it is patience, patience, patience. And so I want to disclaimer that before I even kind of talk about these two boards. It's like, generally, your hitters, you're just waiting things out. Pitchers, you can react a little bit to if velocity has changed, either as we're finding out in either direction, may not be a good thing, which was our kind of our theme last Tuesday. This week, what we're going to look at is what we call max EV, which is maximum exit velocity, if you're not aware. And basically, that is what is the hardest that you've hit the ball all year in terms of miles per hour. And so max EV just measures that. It doesn't care if it's a ground ball, a fly ball, a line drive, a pop up. Doesn't really have great max EV, but it's just looking at how hard you can hit the ball. And I think it's useful personally. And obviously this is why I'm showing the board. I think it's useful in small samples because we just don't have enough data. Like, most guys right now around 30 plate appearances, you take the K rate down and some walks and that sort of thing. Like, you've only probably got like 15, 20 batted balls for a lot of these guys. And they're just, I don't think there's much utility yet in looking at things like barrel rate. We will transition into those metrics as we get further into the season. But one thing I do think is, or at least can be useful in these tiny samples is, you know, is said hitter, is it possible for him to hit the ball this hard? And I think that has value, not only for at this short stage of the season, but also when you have prospect call-ups. You know, you want to see, you have like 1 week's worth of data. You might be interested in how hard can they actually hit the ball. It max EV correlates pretty well with power, just in terms of home run output. It's not as good as barrel rate and that sort of thing that we'll transition to once we have a little bit more plate appearances. But that's kind of what I wanted to portray with max EV here is, and especially so what we have on the board is I just took the top 12 and the bottom 12 in terms of max EV this season compared to last season. And actually Ben Tidd brought this up in a listener question that when I posted this on Twitter, basically saying that the right side of this, the max exit velocity fallers, I would not put a whole lot of stock into this list because, again, we have only had 30 plate appearances. I'm much more interested in the green side of this, the risers, who have already hit a ball harder in the first 10 days of the season than they did all of last year. Like, that to me is, you know, pretty interesting and maybe even actionable.
Yeah, potentially actionable. I'm looking forward to this one. Before we get into it, Matt Lee says, for the risers, it shows a lot of these guys are healthy.
Sure.
Valid point. Very, very valid point.
And again, this is just one metric, like, and that's why we have these shows to kind of pay context over it. Let's look at, you know, a strikeout rate on top of it. How are they hitting all ground balls, fly balls, that sort of thing. So yeah, that's a really good point there.
Yep. And it's a stat I like to use. I know, like, it's one of my big arguments when we talk about, like, Thairo Estrada, who not having a great season this year, but when I always said he has power, if you look at his max EV, he's proven when he does hit it hard, he can't hit it hard. So those are the kind of things, as well as you might have these heavy ground ball guys, but when they elevate, like, that was one of the MJ Melendez's, Mikel Garcia's, those kind of dudes. Well, look what they're doing this year type stuff. So there's a lot of ways to look at it. Adam Lee says you can actually buy the followers to positive regress versus the leaders to negative regress. This is correct as well.
I agree. Yep.
All right. Let's talk Joey Meneses here. He's the top one on here, 110.8 to 114.2 this year, a 3.4 mile power increase. But it's a fun one because he's hitting a buck 90. He has one double on the season. And so this is where it makes you dig in and go, what is going on with Joey Meneses? And when you dig in, you know, the ground ball rate's not crazy. It's just a little bit of this and that. What is it like he's got more pop-ups, I guess you could say, but that's like nitpicky here. What are we thinking with Joey Meneses? Because he had the slow start last year that we talked about, and then he finished pretty strong again in the second half. Now here we are in the first half, yet again, struggling.
Yeah, it is, I think, noteworthy that we hit, you know, Meneses has the largest, you know, max exit velo. And again, that's just one batted ball. So who knows, maybe he just squared one up like he's, you know, never seen before, that sort of thing. But just taking a little bit of a wider thing with Meneses, he does have a 46% hard hit rate, which is pretty solid. Again, over what, 44 plate appearances. Yes, the strikeout rate is up, but he's not whiffing that often. So I actually think Joey Meneses, given that he's hitting .211 with zero home runs and two RBI, is actually interesting if he can get first base eligibility and probably a 15 team league. Meneses played first base on Tuesday night, and that is his second game at first base right now. Meneses is UT only, but this is somebody who is, I mean, the Nationals are throwing Jesse Winker out there every day. So like, Meneses is going to play every day. I don't think the Nationals really, you know, care about that. And there's actually, I think, given the plate skills that we saw from Meneses last season, and again, the ability to actually hit a ball 114 miles an hour, which is pretty damn impressive. Deep league, I'm interested if I have a first base or corner injury.
Yep, I'm 100% with you on that one. We're not going to go deep on Fernando Tatis Jr. Just wanted to mention it. 116.8 mile per hour max EV gives him a 3.4 mile per hour increase. That 116.8, I'm pretty sure, was last night's go-ahead home run on Monday night. I think I saw Eno
Smoked
tweeting about that one. And the celebrate, like, I just love Tatis. I hate he's against the Giants, but I love these kids when they get into it. And he just, that celebration. And then there's a video. You guys got to check it out. Just quick Twitter searches are easy, folks. Jackson Merrill was on base, and he's hopping around like a little kid at a candy store waiting for Tatis to score. It just shows how much fun they're having. So I'm jealous of the Padres right now.
That's awesome.
Speaking of his teammate, though, Jake Cronenworth, Rake. This is a guy that a couple years ago we were like, well, the fantasy community was like, yeah, Rake Cronenworth, this is good stuff. I know I was one of them. I was guilty as charged. Last year was brutal for Jake Cronenworth. This year, we see a 1.3 mile per hour increase to 109.7 for his max EV. Hit his first home run of the season on Monday night. Maybe that was that max EV. But overall, still hitting good. Like through tonight's game, hitting .294 with six extra base hits. He's been productive. Are we liking what we're seeing from Jake? Or is this kind of a, like, the barrel rate's great, hard hit rate's great? Like, it points to good stuff.
Yeah, this is, and again, skills can fluctuate just like stats can this early in the season. So, you know, take this all with a grain of salt. But Jake Cronenworth, yes, it's not just that one ball that he mashed to go to 109.7. It's Jake Cronenworth has seven barrels to that one home run. Jake Cronenworth is making hard contact.
Might be another bloom board we have coming up here in a few weeks that we usually talk about.
Don't worry. We'll flip to barrel mode here in a little bit. But yes, seven barrels for Jake Cronenworth on one home run. Like, that tells me that the skill has been there. The results haven't. hitting over 300, which is awesome. And he's not selling out for that power. It's a 16% strikeout rate. Jake Cronenworth is already a really good contact hitter. Career, 17% K rate. Your league average on that is like 22 to 23%. So not only is Cronenworth making harder contact, he's also striking out less. He's also hitting, I think off the top of my head, third or fourth in that lineup. He's first and second eligible. Like, a lot of good things going on for Mr. Cronenworth.
Yep. Big, big fan of what we got going there. And hope some people were able to enjoy the, even with the increased draft price after Korea, got some pieces of that. I'm going to jump to J.P. Crawford here because a lot of people are like, oh, he can't sustain what he did last year when he hit 19 home runs after having a career high 9 prior to that. He went to Driveline. That's the narrative on that one. And we see he went to Driveline again this offseason, and he increased even more on the max EV, 0.6 miles per hour on that max EV. Now, there's 2 points to this, hitting a buck 30 on the season, but does have 2 home runs. So the power is still there. The overall production might be slipping a little with J.P. Crawford, but man, barrel rate's up. When you're looking at J.P., are we optimistic here? Are we concerned? What are you thinking?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, he's got the 2 barrels on 2 homers. Like, that's good, I guess. The Mariners are just, dude, the Mariners are so bad right now.
Yes, they are.
I know that's not J.P. Crawford centric, but I'm not totally sold. J.P. Crawford like took everyone by storm with the 19 home runs last year. He had never hit 10 in a season before that. I'm more than likely to think that goes back to around 10. And again, the max EV that he hit, 110.7 miles an hour, it's only a half mile hour harder than his hardest hit ball last year. So I don't take a whole lot away from J.P. Crawford showing up on this list.
All right, we're going to go to a Bubba in the Bloom favorite here. In the Lourdes we trust. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. upped his max EV, only a half mile per hour, but man, the production jump again early. So 11 games, he's got 3 homers, 10 runs scored, 12 RBIs, a stolen base. He's hitting .298, only striking out 13.5%. But what I love is what you mentioned, the max EV, 10% barrel on his second time in his career. Again, 11 games, that could drop. 50% hard hit rate. Like, the dude is, one would say, locked in at the plate. So what do you think with Lourdes here? Like, I guess you could probably say a little regression could come, but the fact he's hitting it like this is pretty, pretty good.
Agreed. Just quick note from Adam in the chat before I talk about Lourdes, a good point. J.P. Crawford is one of those guys in points leagues that I like, agreed, Adam, not Roto, just because J.P. Crawford plays every day and the walk rate's pretty good. So
sure.
It is something we want to, I don't know, at least me keeping my head more points leagues and OVP. But Lourdes Gurriel, again, could just be a heater, but like all those stats that you just mentioned, Bubba, half of his balls being hard hit, that's pretty damn good. And for me too, it's again, not selling out for that power. Lourdes Gurriel has a 13% K rate. That is awesome. He's a very disciplined hitter, has had a whiff rate in the single digits each of the last 3 seasons. Had that just complete power outage with Toronto in 2022 where Lourdes hit just 5 home runs. It looks like Lourdes is going right back to what we saw last year, which is like a .260 hitter, 25 homers, 5 bags. Like, that's he was one of our favorite buys in draft season because all I needed to do was do what he did last year, and Lourdes Gurriel is, I think, well on his way to doing that, if not more, for Arizona this year.
Yep, 100% with you on that one. Let's talk about another one of our boys real quick. Seiya Suzuki.
There's a lot of favorites on this green. Here.
He's jumped 0.4 miles per hour up to 115 on the max EV front. But, man, he's even 3-for-4 on Tuesday night. So he's hitting .333 on the season at this point in time. With 2 home runs, 12 ribbies. But you look at the stuff that I like to look at. I know you do too. Small sample, but 17% barrel rate. That's 2 homers for 5 barrels. That's about right. Maybe a little below, but close. Almost a 59% hard hit rate, Ryan. Like, this is pretty good.
And in some nasty early season Chicago weather, he's doing this. So I think that's actually notable as well. Yeah, for Seiya Suzuki, honestly, just stay healthy, man. Like, you don't want to prorate what Seiya did last year in the second half, but he finished the season .319, 14 homers, 5 steals in that second half when he was finally healthy, with the corresponding skill growth. And it looks like that skill growth that we saw from Seiya Suzuki to end the season last year has carried right over into 2024. The Cubs lineup looks, I think, pretty awesome. Everything looks rosy for Seiya, but again, it's health dependent. He has been hurt each of his first two MLB seasons.
All right, the last one I was going to bring up here, unless there's anybody else you want to mention, is Michael Conforto.
Yeah.
This has been one that this isn't even the homer in me. This has just been fun to watch because it's one of those, it's been so long since Conforto's been healthy when we've got to see him be productive. But I think we forget that this dude was a 27 to 33 home run guy for three straight years, hit anywhere from 240 to 280. Like, the power was legit, good plate skills in general. Out to a hot start this year, even after going 0-for-5 on Tuesday night, he's hitting .310 with three home runs, and he raised his max EV so far, just 0.2 miles per hour. But to me, it's like last year's first year back from the shoulder injury showed he still has some pop. This year, showing he still has it. Now, when he was in his heyday, he was a couple more miles per hour ahead of this, so that's something to look at also, like when he's really swinging it well. Same time, he's barreling things up, hitting the hard hit rate's 50%. Like, I'm liking what I'm seeing a lot. I'm very skeptical that we will see an injury because Conforto, like, he missed Monday because of a slight side soreness, but I like what we're seeing so far. I don't know about you.
Yes, I've seen a good amount of Conforto as well, and he looks freaking awesome. Yes, those six barrels, like, it's not just that one max EV. He is making consistent hard contact. Yes, I worry about the health. Yes, I worry. I mean, do you worry about a platoon? Does he even play against lefties?
He's one of the few guys that plays every day. Okay. That's been him and him. Yeah, I won't go over the whole team, but he's definitely one of the few that plays every day.
So I think he's probably already rostered, but ride Conforto as long as you can, because this looks pretty legitimate to me. No, he's not going to hit .350, but could he be, could Conforto be the .260 hitter with 30 home runs that we saw in 2019? I know it's a happy fun ball year, but that's also when he was healthy. I could see that.
Like, I'll even be as kind to say as, we were just talking about Lourdes Gurriel. Like, what we saw from Gurriel last year, Conforto could do that. Like, I think it's very doable. 24 home runs, .261, five steals. Conforto could do that, I think, pretty easily if he plays even 140 games. Like, that's very doable. He was added in many leagues. Now, I guess the question, let's just have some fun with this for like a minute or two. Like, 12 team and deeper, five outfield and deeper leagues, Conforto should be rostered. Now, you have three outfield leagues in 12? Probably not.
Right.
10-team leagues? Probably more of a streamer, depending on your setup. But so, like, when we're saying he needs to be rostered, just be very careful with that scenario. Like, you're not dropping a stud. You're not dropping Lourdes Gurriel from Michael Conforto. Let's put it that way. Those kind of scenarios.
Agreed.
All right. If you're good, let's go to the faders side of things here. And there was a question in the chat here. Where did it go? Matt Leahy said, Abreu cooked? LOL. Well, yeah, Abreu's the biggest fader here. 113.3 miles an hour to 102.7, minus 10.6 mile per hour difference from last year, which is crazy because he sucked so much to start last year. Like, people were dropping him, and I've already debated dropping him in leagues. I took him late in drafts this year. He's hitting .067 with no home runs to start the year in 10 games.
Oh.
With a 33% strikeout rate. Like, he looks lost. That's zero barrels, 21% hard hit rate. It's brutal right now, Ryan. It can't be a whole lot worse than this, but I'm worried it might not be a whole lot better than this either.
Jose Abreu has the same number of RBI as he has barrels.
Same amount as we do.
That would be zero. So, yes, it's not just the fact that – so, Matt – Jose Abreu showing up as the, top fader, quote-unquote, in maximum exit velocity. Jose Abreu has hit a ball 102.7 miles an hour. Like, that is good. It's just the fact that he has not been able to hit anything harder than that, which is bad. But it at least just tips you off to say – and this is, again, why we paint context on these boards – to take that deeper look into Jose Abreu, you see striking out a third of the time, not having a single barrel or RBI in Houston right now. Like, is Abreu cooked? Like, I don't know, but you can't have him active on most rosters right now. It's bad, man.
In my 12 teamers, he's on the bench, and I was very close to cutting him because I just, in the back of my head, it's the we all said this last year, and he actually finished like 19 homers and played pretty well in the second half, all things considered. but I'm getting real close to dropping him and trying to, if he starts hitting, bring him back or just suck it up at this point in time, because he's almost a wasted roster spot. Like, do you stash Jose Abreu or actually go get a guy like you could stash, if you know what I mean? It just, it's a tough predicament at this point in time. I'm leaning to cut.
It's not that tough.
Yeah, no. The more we talk it out, this is like therapy, folks.
I think
we just made my decision for this Sunday of someone that'll be leaving my team. This is good to know. All right, let's talk about the Candyman, Jaime Candelario. 111.3 is dropped to 101.9, a 9.4 mile per hour drop. Now, I got a couple things here because the Candyman's coming off a career season last year, starting out slow, 163 average. One home run to start the season. Like I said, last year, career year, been talked about many, many times, but zero barrels and a 32% hard hit rate. Usually sits around 111 mile an hour max EV for like four straight years, almost five straight years. So he has definitely dipped off. I know he was battling an injury early in the season. So this could be one of those speculator hidden injury articles at some point in time. But I don't know. It's tricky. They keep batting him fourth every day, though.
I know. And so you like, it's just the classic is, you know, are you worried? It's like, probably not, but you do look at Candelario with, you know, we just talked about Jose Abreu's strikeout rate at 33%, which is awful. That's where Candelario is. Candelario also does not have a barrel similar to Jose Abreu. Again, it's 43 plate appearances. And we're comparing this to the last three seasons of Jaime Candelario. And like, he's been really good for in 2021 and 2023. So like, no, I'm not that worried. Do you know where what the injury was? Like, was it a shoulder or something like that?
I can look it back up.
That I'd be interested in. Yeah. I'm looking at it, like,
it's like a week or so ago. So let me see if I can find it when we're talking. It was in one of my write-ups. I'd have to go find the darn thing.
Didn't
miss any time.
Okay. While you're looking that up, like I'm not really that worried really about any of these guys. It's just on the fade list. Go ahead.
It was a hyperextended elbow on April 3rd, but he was back in lineup the next day.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, even that, some kind of arm thing like that, you know, is he playing hurt? I don't know. That could be driving it, but I think we're actually starting to see in 12 teamers on the NFBC, it's 100% rostered for Candelario, but he is down to like 90% started. If you do have better options, I wouldn't drop Candelario, but I would, at least until you see some hard contact, I think you can bench him.
Yep, for sure. Mitch Garver is what I want to talk about here, because a lot of people are interested in Mitch Garver draft season. I'm pretty sure I have zero shares of Mitch Garver, but 113.2 last year, dropped down to 104.1 so far to start this season. I'm sitting .179 on the season, which is obviously not ideal. And he's another one of those guys. He does have one barrel, 33% hard hit rate. He was dealing with back injuries like a week or so ago. Let's keep that in mind. But what are your thoughts on Mitch Garver? Because I don't know. It's a slow start, maybe. The Mariners have been garbage, like you said. Maybe it's a trickle-down effect everywhere, but he seems not there right now.
I mean, on the plus side, with that one barrel, Mitch Garver has been one of the better Mariners hitters of 2024.
Fair. Yep.
The back injury worries me, and the proposition with Mitch Garver was you probably think he's going to get hurt at some point, but while he's in there, you're going to get good production. I don't think you're dropping Mitch Garver in two catcher leagues or anything like that. You just kind of wait this out. But you do throw, you said it was a back injury, Bubba.
Yes.
I mean, that given Mitch Garver's injury history, like that is raising the worry level compared to a lot of these other guys.
Yeah, that's what has my concern already, dealing with the back. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes. Jose Siri is a fun one to see on this list. 113.7 last year, down to 105.3, 8.4 mile per hour drop. But on the year, he's already got a home run, got three doubles, hitting .263. Siri has only one barrel, though. 45% hard hit rate, though, which is pretty promising. So this is kind of one of those mixed bags. He strikes out 35%. We know Siri's going to strike out a ton, not probably hit for a good average, but he will give you 20-plus home runs and steal you some bags. So this max EV drop, it's just interesting because he's kind of doing what we expect, just not hitting it hard right now.
Yeah, I'm not that worried about Jose Siri. I just think he hasn't gotten into one yet. And again, it just takes one to get off this leaderboard. Jose Siri is hitting 257, which is not sustainable. 35% strikeout rate. No. Is walking a little bit more early on, but we'll see how long that holds. So everything we thought about Jose Siri before the season, good power speed source, guy who's going to play every day because of his glove, but he's going to hurt you in batting average and still most likely in OBP. I think that all still holds.
George Springer went from 115.9 to 107.6 this year after Tuesday night's games, hitting a .191. He has got two homers on the year, got his first stolen base of the year on Tuesday. It's kind of interesting, though. 14.5% walk rate, 10.9% strikeout rate. So not striking out a ton when you look at George Springer. But all things considered, three barrels, 33% hard hit rate. It's I think there's probably better days to come for George Springer, but it's not like glaringly obvious.
Agreed. I mean, like a 147 BABIP, it's going to turn around. It's very hard to have a 12% strikeout rate and hit 167.
Yeah.
If there's one stat I'm a little worried about with George Springer, it's zero stolen base attempts. But again, he hasn't been on base very often. He picked up
his first two on Tuesday night,
though. Oh, that's right. That's right. So yes, I'm not that worried then, if that was my only concern. He's going to get on base more, and once he gets on base more, the steals will come.
And then just to prove that it's such a small sample and a lot of things can change, Shea Langeliers is on the board at 113.4 max EV, down to 105.5 on the season. Shea Langeliers triple donged on Tuesday night. So I think there's just proof that, again, small sample size, things can change. This is not a joke at Ryan's expense. It's just to the small sample size argument that, like, we're trying to kind of navigate and find holes here and there. Shea Langeliers is the guy that even in preseason I said, okay, he might get 210, but he might get you 35 home runs. Which guy do you want? He proved it to you in a nutshell. The fact he's on this list, hit three home runs in one game. To me, that is the Shea Langeliers experience right there.
And honestly, I mean, I can laugh at myself all the time. And that's one of the allures of this show, I think, is we bust each other and bust ourselves. Shea Langeliers hitting three home runs is I like to see it, despite being on a red board. We did see, got a comment from someone on Twitter saying that, I want to find the name. Yes, Eric Smolski. Shea Langeliers read this board from the dugout. I don't know. Do they have Wi-Fi in Oakland?
They weren't in Oakland. They were in Texas. So, yes, they do have Wi-Fi.
So he did. That's right.
Yeah,
they did read it from the dugout.
They have proper plumbing, heating, and air. Yeah, they have everything you need there.
Good.
But, just you should go check your recent follows and see if he's sitting there and get it for you. Yep. But anybody else on either board that you'd like to talk about at all? Because I think we covered most of them. Some guys, like, you know, there's Noda, there's McNeil. I'm not worried about J-Ram or Olsen or Acuna. Like, none of that bothers me at all. But anything stand out to you?
I think we covered you brought up the fallers that I think I, you know, kind of would be most concerned about, guys we did not touch on. Yeah, like Matt Olson. Matt Olson only has a max EV of 111 miles an hour. Yeah. I'm not worried. Acuna
that's more than most people's best on this list from the year before.
Exactly. Acuna is on this list because he somehow hit a ball 121 miles an hour last year. So yeah, like, he's gonna fall. Again, this is kind of why we're going through this exercise of trying to give you all context to just don't automatically fade guys on the right side. And honestly, if I did this exercise again, I would just do the risers. I probably wouldn't even look at the faders. We didn't cover Michael Harris on the positive side. I think Michael Harris hitting a ball 114.5 miles an hour is very noteworthy. Yeah. So we'll give him a shout out there.
And one thing I love about Harris this year is he's hitting sixth every day. Everyone was like, he's either going to be at the bottom or they need an injury to get him to the top. They put him at six. Like, he's right there to clean up whatever Ozuna and Olsen and Riley don't clean up, which ain't much most of the time. But I think that's pretty interesting stuff, too.
Injury away from being first or second, too. So.
Yep. So, all right. Well, that'll wrap up our Bloom board from the week. Michael Cicchini says, J-Ram is back on his elite run RBI pace we saw before last year. He may have gone too late. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Time will tell. It is the Cleveland Guardians, so don't get
decent lineup. Come on. Not much pop, but they're pesky.
They are very pesky. It's one thing in DFS I say, don't get comfortable with starting pitchers. They don't strike out. and they can BABIP you to death.
So. Pablo Lopez pitched well. I may have said this on the pod last time, but Pablo Lopez pitched pretty well against him this last time out. And
one of the few. One of the few has been able to pull that achievement off.
Well, he didn't have good numbers, but he pitched well, in my scouting opinion.
Fair enough. All right. Let's take some listener questions slash thoughts on tonight's episode. Start with JB at Beat Rick and Frank. Need a utility guy. 14-team head-to-head league. Nelson Velasquez, Brett Beatty, Eugenio Suarez, Tydad France, Kirilloff, Blackman, short-term place filler. Ooh, that's fun.
God, so there's layers to that one. Blackman, I don't know if this is like a daily league or whatever, but Blackman, when he's at home, Blackman's actually playing pretty well right now.
He's hitting everywhere right now.
Alex Kirilloff, when the Twins are facing righties, is probably the best of that bunch. Yep. Did he hit his first homer?
Yep.
He's mentioned in my speculator article coming out tomorrow. So if you can kind of mix and match, that's what I would do some version of Kirilloff and Blackman.
Yep. Those are the two guys that stood out to me. Like, if you just want strictly power, roll the dice on Nelly Velasquez. But Blackman and Kirilloff are the dudes I want right now. I picked up Kirilloff in a lot of leagues last week because there's a lot of righties coming up on the schedule for the Twins. And I picked up Blackman in a few where he was available because he's leading off every day, either playing the outfield or DH. He's hitting very well. So get while the old man's healthy, take advantage of it. All right. Thomas Travato says, sad emojis for losing Pivetta only. This has been a nightmare. Yes, friend. Yep. In the chat here, Jeff Mitziff says, Kirby Yates or David Robertson?
And so some context behind this one is Jose Leclerc has been awful.
Yes.
And blew a save tonight, I believe, gave up two runs. Yes.
Shea Langelier's third home run of the game.
That was Shea's third. I mean,
Shea drove in all four runs of those three home runs.
There's no shame in giving up home runs to exit velo fader Shea Langelier.
Shea Bangaliers.
That was okay.
That's actually that's one that's used on TV for Oakland. So yes.
What do you think, Yates or Robertson? I lean Robertson.
I've been Robertson because through and through, but Yates is throwing very well. So that's why the question is at least more enticing. But I'm a Robertson guy through and through. But to our initial conversation at the beginning of the show, Yates is not a bad guy to pick up if you just want innings.
Robertson hasn't been missing a ton of bats or anything like that. So I don't know. I lean Robertson, but I do think something's going to happen. I think Jose Leclerc is out of there very soon.
I lean Robertson because that's what they signed him for, in my opinion, was to be this guy, where Yates is more of like a flyer who could end up there. I'm not saying he couldn't. Yeah. I just think Robertson gets first crack at the scenario. Ben Tidd, Yankee is the one you mentioned. This is definitely saying more for the guys on the left than it is for the right. Hopefully listeners don't take it the wrong way and assume that guys that haven't met their 2023 maxes are in trouble. Patience, you must learn. That is correct.
Yeah, that's a good that's hopefully what I got across with looking at little more of the risers and kind of not totally ignoring the faders, but major grain of salt.
Yep. Big John Stud, John Legace.
Oh, all right.
I love the show. I never miss. Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you, John.
These max and min EV differences, where do you think the line is for being actionable?
I think I personally think it depends on when you're looking at it. I think it's actionable if you have already at this stage and 10 games in, maybe that's just luck. You know, anyone can hit their hardest ball in the first week of the season or whatever. I think the earlier it is, the lower that threshold becomes, if that makes sense. So if someone in the first 10 games has already hit a ball or hit a ball like a 0.5 miles an hour harder than they did all of last season, again, I think that's at least worth a deeper dive into that player. If we're in August or whatever, and you've got a half mile an hour or 1 mile an hour bump and max exit velo from last year, I'm not that, you know. It's a mile on it's a mile per hour. It's not that much, and you've had a half season to try and get there.
Yep, I'm with you. And then he also says, how much are you chalking up to weather? That's not a bad question either. But then he mentioned Seiya Suzuki, who's crushing baseballs in Wrigley.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. That's a very good question. Is there a relationship between exit velocity and weather?
Yeah, it's a great question. Don't know. It's a question for somebody much smarter than me. Probably Ryan can figure it out, but give him some time.
I did do a deep dive on Luis Castillo's stats by weather, by temperature, opening pitch, first pitch, temperature range a few years ago for HQ. So it can be done.
Martin Sikulski says, okay, I love the Bloom boards, but we should definitely leave Acuna off. LOL. That 121 is freakish. Maybe we do max minus seven. Yeah, yeah, no, that was a standalone.
Not worried about Acuna, although he has not. Yeah, he stole a couple bags tonight. I'm not worried.
Bags tonight. Yeah,
he's three bags.
Fine. Yeah, Jesus. He's looking fine. He'll be just fine, folks.
Not worried.
Corbin Young, our buddy, says, "Why you got to go that way to Benintendi?" Yeah, he's not that good.
Not even worth a mention, man. Yeah, he's not that good.
Yeah, it's just
he's part of that White Sox.
His max EV is less than 100 miles an hour. Like, come on, bro.
What are we at? He went from 109 to 99 point. I'm actually more surprised Benintendi hit 109 mile an hour ball last year.
Fair. Very fair. Everybody calling my shot. He says, what can max EV really tell us? I know it gives us a sense of raw power ceiling, but is there a 1v1 between max EV and home run ceiling? For example, does hitting one ball 110 mean you could hit 30 home runs? And does having 106 max mean you can't? I don't think that's correct. No.
So there's a lot to this, but like, I do think having the ability to hit a ball 117 miles an hour or whatever does say you have the ability to hit, you know, you have a power ceiling, and maybe it's just a hard hit ground ball or whatever, but like, there is something to, you know, I physically cannot hit a ball 117 miles an hour.
I've seen not speaking for you, but I've seen a golf ball. I have faith in you.
So I think from that aspect, like, I think it can be useful. Like I said at the top, max EV, I really kind of only use it when we have a week or two's worth of data. And even then, it can be, who was your boy on the Giants last year who smashed a ball like in his debut? Casey Schmidt.
Yes.
Casey Schmidt hit like 111, kind of making this up, but it was destroyed like in his first or second game, and kind of never did it again. So a lot of it's just kind of when you do it. I will say there is, you know, you can look at like 80th percentile exit velocity, and I think that is much more valuable than maximum, because again, maximum is just one. I'm more curious in like, how often can you get close to that maximum? And 80th percentile max EV or 80th percentile exit velo is something I'll probably throw on a few boards throughout the year. Yeah. I think that's pretty interesting to look at, because it does compare, you know, that batted ball versus your top ones and your bottom ones. It's just at this point, we, like I said, we only have 20, 25 batted balls. So like, it's, I don't know, it's hard.
Yeah, that like 80th percentile, I remember seeing that come up a couple years ago. Now that's like a usable stat, like you said, by at least midseason or so. Probably get a rough idea there. So you can see a guy that's like you said, routinely hitting it very hard. Let's put it that way. But also, just even on a small sample, kind of the exercise we did is it, and that's how every Bloom board, I know we say it probably every show, is it just gives you the reason to dig in deeper on a player. So, okay, so the guy hits it 112 miles an hour. Now, does he hit a lot of ground balls? Does he do this? Does he do that? Like, if he hits a lot of ground balls and tilts at 112, then yes, he cannot hit 30 home runs. It's probably just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But if he hits at 112 and say he hits 40% ground balls and 42% fly balls, well, if he just tweaks at a small percentage, he might be a 25 to 30 home run guy now. Like, those are the kind of things you can look at, especially trying to like look ahead to next season when we do like our offseason analysis. That's why I know it's lazy, but I keep saying Thairo Estrada is a guy that stood out to me. We've talked to Mikel Garcia, Melendez, and many more. Just because you look at those kind of numbers and go, okay, the potential's there. It's sitting there. What tweak has to be made? And so maybe it's more of an off-season thing, but in-season, I think there's definitely something you can look to as well. Wake Up says, question. This is more of a joke thing. It says, Ruiz or Scott? The answer, Siri. So he's just having fun with the board on that one. There's Eric Samolsky. Shea Langeliers read this tweet in the dugout. But then Eric has a serious question. He says, curious if you guys have checked out the new EV50 stat on StatCast and what your thoughts are on it. I kind of like seeing what a guy consistently gets to at the high end. Perhaps it might be more useful than max. Still figuring that part out.
Yeah, I have not either. I did just do a cursory look while we're looking at it. EV50 is the average of the hardest 50% of his batted balls. I'm trying to process that. kind of just sounds like the 75th percentile.
Yeah, pretty close to what you were talking about earlier.
Same general concept of like you want to look at maybe that somewhere in the higher end, not the max, but somewhere in that higher end, because it does take into account, you know, it penalizes you for softer hit balls because you're, you know, that 80th, 75th percentile, whatever you want to look at, would then go down a little bit. So I think same general concept, Eric. I will check out that stat. Yet another new stat. Yes. Got to keep
another
up.
One. Another one. I have to add that to my my slab and you know chisel it in.
Put it on, goes. Yeah. Next to that staple on page 284 next to your desk there.
I have to go buy a whole new notebook. Jamie Sayer says this is a Jared Walsh erasure. Jared Walsh actually playing pretty good.
Walsh? Is he on there?
He's not on the board. Not that I noticed, but he's having a good start to the year.
Yes, and will not probably play one. I always get March and Walsh mixed up.
It's with this Nathaniel Lowe.
Right? Yeah.
Yep, Nathaniel Lowe. And then Nick Lyons, he piggybacked on to Legeza's stuff. Definitely would be interesting to see their max XFV though in April versus August. Totally agree on the weather. There's probably something to it. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. But you still have to make that swing, the contact. You have to do all that stuff leading up to it, no matter the temperature. And so to me, it's like if you make the proper contact, the ball's still leaving probably pretty darn good. Just throwing it out there when it's measured, not like I think the weather distance might be different. But I think the ability to hit the ball hard, the weather shouldn't dictate it as much.
That's what this is. This is off the bat. So you're
saying, so it shouldn't matter as much in theory. Yeah. So,
but that said, trying to hit a golf ball at
in
50 degree
when weather. Your body's frozen and your back still can't move, it's tricky. But that's also because I'm 40. So
hungover.
These guys are professional. I'm overweight. There's a lot.
There are other ailments eliminating us from hitting a ball.
There's a whole lot of factors involved here that professional athletes probably don't have to deal with. Let's put it that way.
I want to see Bubba's max EV zero high noons in versus, you know, five or six versus, that could be an interesting study.
First pitch Arizona, bring out the guns. Let's go. See what we got. But all right, we're going to wrap it up there. Any final thoughts, Mr. Bloomfield?
No, let's just hope no one else gets hurt.
And yeah, that's by the time you guys listen to this show, hopefully no one else has gotten hurt.
I know. No final thoughts. Appreciate the chat though. This was fun. It was fun in there. A lot of good listener questions. And again, we love the engagement and answering and hanging with you all. So keep it coming.
Yep. Keep it coming. It's always fun. Again, Tuesday's Bloomboard night. Thursday coming at you in 2 days, previewing the following week's fab. It's been a fun exercise as usual. So, Michael's got a fun one here. I'll let Ryan read that.
Michael says, you guys should get some imaging. Bubba, like Flintstones with a slab, and me in a Jetson spaceship. Old reference, I know.
Yeah, no, I watched that as a kid. Bloomfield probably didn't, but I know what you're talking about, Michael. I was Saturday morning cartoons. So it's fine. You know, for those that have watched the Jetsons, we're past that day when they told us we'd be using flying cars. So George could go, you know, to the moon. That's the nicest way to say it. But yeah.
We go back with Kenta Maeda.
Yep, go out back with kids, man. George, get out of here. Don't make me stick Bam Bam on you. All right, we're going to wrap it up there before we really go off the rails here on a Tuesday night. Again, we'll be back with you guys Thursday to preview the Week 4 fab as usual, and bring your questions and comments, and we'll get you going as well. But for now, you can check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. This was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 124. Catch you all next time.